Hello, check check. All right, I think my mic's working good. So where we left off was talking about the fevers, talking about Samuel Thompsonian vitalism, and let's go into some Ayurvedic philosophy and theory on the immune system. And there's a word in Sanskrit in the Ayurvedic tradition called ojas. Ojas. Ojas is what I call it. And I think the best translation for this concept is the energetic thermos. So, how does a thermos keep the stuff inside of it warm when it's cold outside? Or how does it keep the stuff inside of it cold when it's warm outside? It does that because it's a thermos, it's an energetic layer that is protecting from the elements. This is a old crappy vintage thermos right there. And nowadays you can get some super duper, nuclear lined titanium ojas, basically, that can really, like, I have this coffee thermos that I could put hot coffee in. I've left it in my car overnight when it's like 15 below zero. And I go out there the next day and it's still like really hot and almost too hot to drink. That's how good of a thermos it is. There's thermoses that have, that are big and tall. There's thermoses that are smaller and wider. There's thermoses that are chipped. The paint is chipped on the side and maybe the inside is made out of aluminum. Maybe the inside is made out of like glass lined and some of that glass is broken. We all have different energetic containers. Sometimes the stuff that you put into the container is corrosive to the inside, and sometimes the environment on the outside of the container is more corrosive to the outside. Like imagine like the thermos cup of like a construction worker who's a roofer and has dropped it several times compared to somebody who, goes to a 9-to-5 job or something like that, right? Their thermoses might look way different. And this is the best way that I can understand the concept of ojas. We have our constitutional thermos that we're like born with. It's the new out of the box thermos. There's ways to deplete the energetic capacity on the inside. There's ways to deplete the energetic capacity on the outside. And there's also ways to maintain and work the best with what we got. So it's a, I would say that the ojas is really referring to the vitality of the potential capacity for vitality. I think it's more in like Chinese medicine, we might say it's like your has a lot more to do with like your yin, your like your nourished self. I think this is really in line with like the wise woman tradition too. Like the more nourished you are, the more resilient you might be to stress and everything like that. So the idea is building up this nourishment over a long period of time. So I'm just going to look through my slide here, see if there's anything I missed. The ojas is the result of a healthy digestion and proper assimilation. So being able to digest your food, being able to assimilate things, being able to maintain overall health and well-being, cleaning out your thermos at the end of the day, all that type of stuff. The process of ojas forming is closely linked to the quality of food consumed. In Ayurveda, ojas is made from the essence of all seven tissues of the body. These are known as dhatus. So we have the plasma, the blood, the muscle, the fat, the nervous system, the bones, sorry, the bones, the nervous system, then the reproductive fluid. Reproductive fluid is the final one. And that is the one that gets nourished the last. So I'm going to come back to that. But basically, you need every little part, every single one of those tissues in the body in our Ayurvedic model to donate some of their essence in order to have an energetic container. So if the reproductive channels are faulty. There's going to be faultiness with your energetic container that's able to maintain your health. If your nervous system is kind of whacked out, your energetic thermos is going to suffer. Broken bone, broken immune system. And then the easiest things to correct are on the plasma and blood level. And the deepest things to balance in Ayurveda are those deeper tissues, the nerves and the reproductive tissues. That takes a long time. It takes nourishment. It takes building. Okay. I was going off in the top of my head and I didn't even read the slide in front of my face. Okay. all right. So let me just move on. Maybe I'll read the slides as I go. Okay. So Ojas, how do we build Ojas? Like we got this gifted to us at birth, but there's ways to like maintain it and to build it up as well. Especially if it's depleted. Adhering to a schedule is huge because the lack of schedule is something that increases your vata. And when vata gets out of balance, all of the tissues can get out of balance very quickly. So something as simple as waking up with the sunrise and getting nice and cozy as the sun sets maintains your energetic. Have you ever noticed that if you spend the midnight oil, if you're like burning the midnight oil too many times in a row, working late, but you're getting enough sleep, but you're also, your schedule's kind of whack, like you take a nap in the afternoon or something like that, you're still more prone to feeling under the weather. The schedule is key, like having a schedule, having quiet time. Oops, there's your vata again. This is why I learned this from my first teacher, Amanda, my Ayurvedic teacher. She was doing things to like build up her ojas. So she would go on retreats and where yoga people hang out, ashrams. And they would just be like sitting there doing their yoga poses, like very, very gentle yoga poses for a week. Nothing, no talking or anything like that. And that was what she would do to like restore her ojas and then all kinds of other therapeutic things, oils and everything like that. So physical touch from loved ones, really important for building your immune system in the Ayurvedic tradition, in my mind too. I think this is key. What kind of yogis and Vedas were turning in their grave when they were telling people to stay 6 feet apart and to leave behind their loved ones and like put them behind plastic, containers and whatever, and they can only hug them through these things. They foresaw that type of stuff, and they've realized through whatever way of gaining these types of perspective a long time ago that you actually become more resilient and you become better at defending yourself against illness when you are in contact and close with people that you love and that love you. Like this is a major thing. Life-filled food. I would say high prana food. And then like heavier nourishing things are really good for the ojas. So think about this, like coming into the winter, honey. And in Ayurveda, honey has to be like raw honey. If it's cooked, it's poisonous, according to the Karaka Samhita, the oldest text. So don't cook your honey. Sorry, baklava. That's like poison, according to Ayurveda. That's just another poison to think about. It's not going to be part of this nourishing ojas type stuff. So ghee, which is purified butter, avocados. So you're seeing the pattern here of like sweet, heavy nuts, again, with fatty stuff, whole grains. That's way different than a lot of, what people eat in America, which is refined grains. Paul Check from the Paul Check Institute. You know that dude, Paul Check? He's an interesting, like, I don't know. He's a older guy that's like big buff and philosophical and is all about movement and stuff like that. He always talks about the four white devils, which is refined sugar, refined grains, pasteurized dairy, and salt. So, okay. Retaining sexual fluids. Remember the datus that are kind of donating a little bit of their essence to your immune system. So holding on to those is really key to your health, not spending them at any chance on the Ayurvedic in this philosophy. I would agree. Yoga and meditation, body specific yoga. Okay, so if you're doing like, if you're like a pitta type person and you're like into super hot yoga, that's going to burn your ojas out. If you are a vata person and you're into like the acrobatic yoga, that's going to burn your ojas out. So it's got to be body specific. Think about that and tailor that. If you're the kapha type person, then the hot yoga would be good with a kapha teacher. And if you're a vata type person, then like very still isometric poses that are just that you really just try to meditate into, that's better for the vata. Pitta does need some movement, but you know, they have to watch it with it too. Sleep, of course, healthy relationships as opposed to the toxic ones, and good digestive habits. So it seems pretty like common sense. I think there's some of these that might stand out as like worthy of note taking. But this is just core immune system stuff. And I mean, when I mean core, I mean like the building aspect of your immune system. I used to think of it as like the immune system as like two different channels. I thought of the core immune system that was like a castle that was like capable of defending against invaders. And then I also thought there was like, that was one part of the immune system. And then I thought of the other part as being like the soldiers that go out and like, you know, whoop some ass. And I've definitely changed my mind on that because I don't really have, there's not really good evidence for invaders. There's none. And the second thing is knowing the function of bacteria and fungus in an environment, it doesn't really make sense to encourage your body to stop that. In fact, they're helping along by, you know, we have these cells that take out the garbage, so to speak. So anyway, and it's also into that whole war narrative, you know, war and fighting against yourself and fighting like both basically. Anyway, I'm just going to move on here. I was about to go down a big rabbit hole. I had it on the tip of my tongue. So things that deplete ojas are not getting enough sleep, overexerting yourself, being too stressed out. Come on. You know how that goes. Not retaining reproductive fluids. Huge. This is huge for your energetic container. So it's kind of difficult to quantify that for women. For men, it's not. It's like, it's easy. You know, it's about, it's really easy to understand what I'm talking about when it comes to men. For women, it's different, but there is a, let's just say there is a toll that's taken from excess sexual partners in whatever person we're talking about, and the lack of temperance. So I'll just leave it up to you to explore that more in whatever way you want to. But I'm finding, and with my work, with my clinical work, with my personal work, everything like that, that the human being is optimized when they are disciplined in their restraint in this particular way. This is why Tantra exists. Because they're like, oh, seriously, we can't do it. And they're like, no, there's another way. You just don't get all the way there. And then you transcend. And then you bring that life force energy back up into your body. And it's like way more fun. So there are practices for that. It's not like a big, huge bummer, like, whatever. Screen time, this is going to increase Vata. Screen time is going to wreck your immune system, period. Eating old processed food, sometimes you got to get a bite, but sometimes it's better for your immune system if you fast. And sometimes it's better for your immune system if you eat something. Going on to the next point here, prolonged fasting, that can be detrimental to your immune system too. Remember, we're talking about like an energetic container here that needs to be nourished. Caffeine, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, all those things that we mentioned before, you name it. Definitely pharmaceuticals. A lot of people are addicted to caffeine. I am. A lot of people drink. I do once in a while. It's been a long time since I've had one, but I, I taste tinctures every day, things like that. I don't think that that's the same, but, and here's a huge one that I think a lot of people might not consider how it affects their immune system, but engaging in toxic relationships, just being around toxic people, not ending that type of stuff, that's going to take its toll on the human. Okay. Mute it for a second. I have to cough. How do I do that? Oh, yeah. So herbs. Let's talk about the herbal component because we all, all that stuff makes sense, but here's what we're here for, really, the herbs. Astragalus is one of my favorite OGIS immune, core immune tonics. It's got a lot of polysaccharides, same with medicinal mushrooms, a different kind of polysaccharides. But I think that one of the ways that astragalus works so well is by nourishing the skin and the mucous membranes. A lot of times it's called a lung tonic too. And I've heard like some theoretical arguments against astragalus, which never really rang true with me back in time, that like it's not good to take astragalus when you're sick because it's like turbocharging the pathogens. And since pathogens actually don't exist in the way that they're described in that model, I don't see that. And there's really no evidence, there's no clinical evidence for that. It was just kind of a theoretical thing. Like, astragalus is so good at tonifying, therefore, it's gonna. Well, there's some people that say that when they start taking astragalus, it makes their cold or whatever last longer. Think of it this way. Astragalus is the way that I was thinking about it before was that, like, you had your castle and then you had your soldiers. I'm still going to keep the castle metaphor. And in order to build a nice strong thermos, a nice strong fortress that's really good at holding the resources within itself and repelling in the environment and the stresses of the environment away, you need to have some good stonemasons to come and put their little blocks and put their mortar on, carve out the statues. These are the type of workers that aren't in a fight. They're the stonemasons. And that's what these plants are. These are the core builders of the immune system. So, if you're sick, do you think it's appropriate to start working on the stonemasonry department of your holy temple? Or do you think it might be more appropriate to work with the vital response of the temple, which is getting the dwarves to fire up the forge and getting the elves to open the windows and so on and so on. So what astragalus is like your I don't know, the trolls that move the big old blocks, you know what I mean? So that's what they are. I don't know what trolls is the right word. What's the word? Giants. They're giants. So astragalus is awesome. Medicinal mushrooms, you name them. These aren't the mushrooms that people are foraging for food per se. Like some of them are, like maitake and shiitake and lion's mane. Oop, it says lion's comma mane cordyceps. That's commas in the wrong spot. Note to self. But these are the ones that are more like difficult to process, difficult to work with, and so reishi. We just did a cool interview with James Frosch of Family Fungi. It's on my YouTube channel. Talked went real deep into reishi, and that's on the Herb of the Week too. Chaga, I'm going to cover that once upon sometime soon in a deeper dive as well. Birch polypore, one of my favorites, really abundant. Chaga, people are like, I don't know, chaga, it's kind of like, it only produces in nature, and maybe it's not like sustainable, and there's no way to cultivating it, and blah blah blah. I mean, people don't realize that the taiga, the boreal forest is like comprises like most of the Earth's land mass where chaga is, but it's just not, people aren't living there because it's too cold. So I'm not concerned about the sustainability of chaga. I use what I can like gather, in my shirt, basically, and that's enough for like a large community that I serve. So, but I get it. There's some exploiters out there. It's always important to like remind us each other of our precious resources and think of alternatives like birch polypore, which also grows on birch trees and synthesizes some of the same betulinic acid properties that chaga does. And is also really great for all of these OGIS energetic containing brick and mortar kind of fitting stonework. These are mushrooms that they found on Otzi the Iceman, and he was like all jacked up with all kinds of things that indicated pain and whatnot and suffering. So he was carrying around birch polypore. He was carrying around tender conch, it's called. That's not like the conch that you swipe on. You do. I take that back. It's called tender conch because you can like whoosh, 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 make a fire with it. So you definitely swipe on that one. But again, another one that grows on birch trees, belted polypore, and so on and so on. Cordyceps is awesome too. Fo-ti, or also known as Hoshu-wu, also known as Hishou-wu. And that's a longevity tonic in the Chinese tradition. And that's a really interesting plant. It has to be prepared in a certain way with like beans, cooked with beans, like black beans and stuff like that. And I really like, I'm really into this like old-timey indigenous, like it's not right unless you do it this way and this way and this way. Type of medicine making. And so Fo Ti or Hoshu Wu or Hishu Wu is that. It's something it's a black plant, it's a black root after it's been cooked with these black beans. And that's why this fella, whose name was Ho, and sometimes his name was called he got his Shu Wu, which means his hair turned black again. So that's a good one. A longevity tonic you could think of. Somebody's hair is turning white, well, get some Hoshu Wu. It turns black again. What if you're blonde? I don't know. I don't know. Most people in China are have black hair, I would say, probably 99.9%. Kelp, and that's a great nourishing. Just think of now also like your nourishing herbal infusions. We're gonna say burdock. We're gonna say comfrey. I'll say nettle, red clover. What else can you think of? Violets. I'm missing a few, I'm sure. Linden, that's nice. Oat straw, of course. Those kind of ones. Ashwagandha, shatavari, gokushura or gokshura is those are all in the Ayurvedic tradition called rasayanas, which means longevity bringers. Eleuthero, also known as Siberian ginseng, Eleutherococcus sinticosus, and shilajit to quit, and chyawanprash. I've learned the way that I learned how to say it was called chyawanprash, and this is a formula of several different herbs. Sometimes it could be like 30, 40 herbs, and it's basically like a jam or jelly. It's been like cooked down with a whole bunch of ton of herbs, and it's a lot like spreadable shilajit, It's just this like gooey mash that's actually has a nice flavor to it. It's made with honey and it's made with sometimes figs and things like that. It's also from the Ayurvedic tradition. And the idea is that you like just take a spoon of that and you just like munch on that, you know, once a day or something. It's a good idea to find some chavanprash. If you find a good source, let me know. I'm always looking for better ingredients than some of the ones that I could find. Cause a lot of times they're just made with like the ones that I see in the store are like with white sugar and I'm not into that. Maybe we'll have to make our own chavanprash someday. That sounds fun. Or chaiwanprash, however you want to call it. Okay. This fine human being is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, this is she's the one that like I've always had this concept. This is one of the first things I learned about the body was the Ojas. And as a energetic container, and on an interview that I was listening to with Dr. Daniels, she was talking about like it in the form of a thermos, and it just like clicked with me that it just made a lot more sense. I always had a hard time like conceptualizing it or explaining Ojas. The way that Ojas was originally explained to me is that your immune system is like a cup, and your constitution is that you're built with like the amount of water. So some people have like a lot of water and some people have a little bit of water. And also the constitution is like the consistency of your cup. Sometimes it's chipped, sometimes it's really thin, it's really susceptible to breaking, sometimes it's really tall. And the poisons and stressors and deficiencies that we have in our life are like putting rocks and pebbles into our energetic container. And eventually that water spills out and it's no longer contained. That water is our essence, or the tea or whatever you want to say, that eventually spills out. So if I have it filled up with rocks this much and it's still in there, there's still enough essence, and I put one more rock on because I say to myself, I'm going to, I don't know, do something. I'm having a hard time thinking of, I'm gonna take on this new project and it's gonna keep me up at night for 4 or 5 nights in a row. It's like, poof, there it is, and all of a sudden it flows out. Well, it's not that made you sick. It's all this stuff. It's all of the stuff in there. So if I did want to do this project and keep up myself up at night or whatever, before I put that stone in there, it would be wise to take another one out. Well, whatever one of those other ones represents, you know, maybe I should give up sugar. Maybe I should give up, maybe I should retain my semen or something like that. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So I think it's a good idea to retain your semen, fellas. It's not like I'm talking to a lot of them. Okay. Dr. Jennifer Daniels talked about that energetic container concept as a thermos, and that's when it clicked with me. And so I really liked Dr. Jennifer Daniels. She's awesome. She's a great hero of mine. She's alive and well and full of youth, as you could see, but she's old. Look at this woman. But she's so vital and healthy. She's one of these rock stars that went to Harvard and honor graduate and started up a clinic in, was it Detroit, I think. And basically like an all black inner city, you know, clinic with a lot of health problems. And within a year or two, she brought the fatality rate within her clinic down to zero. Nobody in her practice was dying anymore. And I don't know if she took on this practice. So there was a lot of ill people. And what she was doing was she was saying, basically, look, I have to tell you that when you come in and you're presenting these symptoms, I have to give you an antibiotic. Like, that's what I have to tell you because I'm a doctor and this is my license depends on it. But I'll tell you that my patients that don't get this filled don't have problems. And my patients that do have problems. And the ones that don't take my medicines when they come back, they are the healthier ones. And the ones that do take the medicines that I'm supposed to tell you that you're supposed to take, die. And they are the ones that get sick. So, hey, I'm supposed to tell you these things. I'm your doctor. Informed consent, you know, that's what we're supposed to be telling you. But I'm your doctor, and so I have to recommend you take this. Okay, just so you know, people that don't take this will live longer. And so that's her thing. She was educating her patients with informed consent. And they didn't like that because they were finding out that she wasn't prescribing anything. And so she had to go before like the board of licensure. And they're like, hey, why isn't anybody in your practice getting any pharmaceuticals? Like that's, this is how we make money, don't you know? And they basically ran her out of town. They harassed her into surrendering her license. So if you look up Dr. Jennifer Daniels, this will be a nice, to me, when I'm like, oh, when I'm a bloodhound on the right trail, I know that I am, because the trail doesn't exist. It's hard to find. So if you look up Dr. Jennifer Daniels right now, it's really hard to find information about her. It's hard to find her website. It's hard to find anything other than like quackwatch.com or something like that. And her crime, healing people. Her crime, her patients not dying. So she's originally from Georgia or from the South, and she was interested in her ancestral lineage because a lot of her, like the older folks that are in that from where she was growing up, were always talking about like what their grandparents told them or whatever from the slave days. And what they were doing was they were taking, this is something that like, I'm just giving you the information and I want you to look into it. I really don't have any recommendations on this at all. In fact, I am somewhat against this protocol personally, but I'm going to provide it, this information for you so that you can think about it and do it yourself. But she started talking about, what she started learning was that people were doing cleanse with distilled spirits, 100% distilled spirits of pine resin. If you buy a bottle of that, it's going to say on the bottle, turpentine. Now, it's not the turpentine that you get at the art store. It's not the turpentine that you get at the Home Depot. This is 100% distilled spirits of pine resin. Do you know what that means? It's pine resin essential oil. Okay. And she was doing, and she developed basically a protocol where people were taking this in the doses. It's extremely sensitive protocol. But before they were doing that, the whole idea was that they were like cleansing their body. So the first like 3 or 4 weeks before, in order to work this, it was a parasite cleanse. In order to work these parasites out, let's just say the party's over, heavy metals are gone, time to leave, buddy. Let's just get these parasites out of here. There's nothing unhealthier for you than a 20-inch parasite in your intestines that dies. You want that parasite to say, you know what, this party sucks, I'm out of here, and leave on its own accord. You don't want that parasite to die and break down. This is why I'm not like, this is why I'm not a parasite. I'm not into parasite cleanses and stuff like that, because I think a lot of them can be really heroic. And I think a lot of them can be, people don't really want to put in the work. They just want to do the thing and then go back to living the way that they've been living without changing anything. So the first part of her protocol is like 3 weeks to a month is just like eating vegetables and eating and drinking tea and getting your bowels in gear so that you can have an elimination 2 to 3 times a day. Like before you even, oh, like how crazy is that, right? Having nourishing herbal infusions and eating well sourced food, healthy food, and getting your body like really in shape. So that alone, I think, is something that is really worth considering just from a healthy standpoint. And I think if anybody is interested in looking into her protocol, maybe just doing those first 3 weeks and seeing how you feel before going in any further. But basically, they reserve the turpentine for you know, anything else. So they were using that for pain. They were using that for cancer. They were using that. She was using that for everything. And now she's in Ecuador and she has a clinic as well. I don't think she practices as a medical doctor anymore because she had to surrender her license. So it's kind of like health coaching type stuff and does a lot of education on the internet and has some product line of stuff that I think is really good. One thing that I really like to endorse about Dr. Jennifer Daniels is, she's extremely fun to listen to. Like, she's fun. She's full of life. She's got a great laugh. She's good at explaining things. She makes things sound like silly. And it's just a really fun person to learn from. But another thing that I really like is her like treats like eating. So like treats like is a tenet of homeopathy, which is if you have a fever or then you'll take something that in a material dose would cause a fever, like poison, except it's homeopathically done. So it has against effect, or I shouldn't say against effect. It encourages your body to it reminds your body. Homeopathy is, I don't quite wrap my head around it all the way, but it is kind of closer to vibrational medicine than what we're working with here with herbs. But this is more close to working with herbs because it's about this material nutrition as opposed to homeopathy, which is about diluting water into its like infinitesimal state that you can never perceive the mercury that's in it or whatever. It's like it's been diluted, you know, 1,000 times. One drop into a gallon, and then a drop from that into another gallon, and then a drop from that into another gallon, and a drop from that into another gallon for like 200 times some of these homeopathic preparations. So it's imprinting the vibration basically of the water. Whereas this is, you know, you're really eating. So you got a sprained tendon, then you eat tendons. You got bad eyes, then you eat eyes. You're going to have to find farmers to do something like that. You can't just go to the store and get eyes. Maybe you can. Maybe at some markets and stuff like that. Maybe like some of the ethnic markets, you could find things like that. Your white hair, squid ink, or Hoshu Wu, which is black, or black seed oil, which is also called cumin seed oil, black cumin seed oil. She was talking about how she was getting gray. And so she started taking squid ink, which is delicious, by the way. It's a nice makes your pasta black. It's really cool. I started taking squid ink because I started getting a couple of white hairs down here. So we'll see. I'm the last person I know my age that doesn't have gray hair. So, broken bones, you're going to drink bone broth. You're going to eat the bone marrows and stuff like that. And I don't mean that in like the gross way, like they do on Instagram where they're like, and they just like eat all this raw meat and stuff like that. If, you know, just be sensible about it, of course, you know, whatever appeals to you. And this is also like in line with the doctrine of signatures too. So if you're not into bone broth and if you're not into eyeballs, I'm not. I like bone broth, but some people just don't even like that type of stuff. Well, just think about the signatures that you find in plants that are bone-like. And I'm thinking bone set and things like that and how that makes sense. And then one of her things that really, really, this is how I really understand the immune system from an energetic perspective, is being a vessel that has a potential to mitigate what's going on inside and mitigate what's going on outside. And there being a difference between the outside and the inside, that it is probably what I think she says, if you're going to get punctured, think again, and then think again. So this is her thing. Don't get punctured. Don't let a needle into your don't let a needle enter into your body. Like, that is one of the most destructive things for the immune system, on Dr. Jennifer Daniels' philosophy. And so what about the blood test that I take so that I can find out what's going on in my blood? Same. So on a physical level, we could say there's a change. There's a difference between what's going on out there and what's going on in here. There's bacteria that exist out here that have to go through all types of chutes and ladders in order to get on the inside here. And when they do, then they're changed. Their shape, their functions changed. All this stuff is different about them. And there is a recognition of I don't know, that those shapes and whatnot. But when it's out there and it just goes whoop right into the environment through on, like, let's say a needle that you're getting blood or an IV or something like that, a life-saving IV. Some people need these things to save their life. And so this is why, you know, it's not about dogma or whatever. This is just like for your information, because she says, if you have to do it, then think about it and then think about it again. And would that extend to acupuncture? Well, acupuncture is like subdermally. And it's just like in that energetic layer. But I think about it also from that energetic perspective, like what consent are we allowing something going on outside? So I had an experience the other time, two times ago that I had blood taken, because I like to read my blood. I mean, I don't go to the doctor, but I get my blood taken and I know how to examine. I know how to do blood exams and stuff like that. And so that's what I do. And I was there one time and I recognized that the phlebotomist, I think that's what they're called, the blood drawer, the vampire, the vampire in a white coat was having an awful day and was really like super stressed out. And like, I could tell from the moment I walked into the room that the energy was like super antagonistic. And they were just in the mundane, like, got to get this done, got to get that done. Probably had some patients that were like, you know, difficult. Maybe they had some insurance companies that were difficult, but were not maintaining their energetic boundaries, maybe completely unaware that they had to. And it was just like leaking negativity outwards. And I was there with my wife because we were both there. And I decided, like, no, let's not do it today. This is not a good idea. This is really not a good idea. And it's really difficult sometimes to convince other people that you're with about these types of things, because it sounds weird. Like, I don't want to talk about it right now. I just don't have the, I don't have a good feeling about it. And I don't have any other way to explain it, but I'm going to accept that it's a pain in the ass, and I will be willing to deal with that instead of having this energy that's going on with this person administer something that's going to puncture my sacred vessel. So that was it. Came back another time, really felt like I put myself through some really protective grounding measures before I went to this type of thing. And I don't think it would have mattered at that point if what the person's energy was, because I was in such a harmonious state that I felt like I could deal with it. When I'm doing pulse reading, this happens too. Like, I'll put my hand on the pulse and the energetic boundary is, because I'm reading energetic pulses, the energetic boundary is the pulse will rise to my finger and go no further. This is the first thing my pulse teacher taught me. And she's a pulse master. She's got a superpower where she can pulse read people at distance. So she's like a psychic pulse reader almost. And truly, and this is like a thing. And anyway, so the pulse will come to my fingertips and go no further. And sometimes I'm really trying to like intellectualize what I'm feeling, and I'm not listening, and I'm like putting these things in categories, and I'm like, okay, that means this, that means that. And I sometimes I'll recognize like my energetic boundary gets broken, and I just like, it's almost like my mind is like going down and looking for an answer. And I, when that happens, I feel it was like zoom, like come up into my hand, and I'm like, oh crap. And the thing is, the other person can too. It always makes something uncomfortable when that happens, because it's an energetic thing. It's an energetic exchange. And so if you become really aware of your boundary, your energetic boundary, when you're projecting, when you're receiving, and when that barrier is just there to meet and not necessarily interact any further, but just like meet that boundary and feel it around, then you'll start to also become aware of when you're like feeling that boundary and you accidentally like kind of slip through, or you're feeling that boundary and you just like turn your attention away to think about something else and it comes through. And so I think this is a really important part of the energetic practitioner. And anyway, there's herbs for all of this, but there's certainly herbs for the puncture part. And so it doesn't have to be like, if you feel uncomfortable hearing this information about don't let anything puncture the skin, and in the context of like the needles and stuff like that, just think of a cat bite, okay? Because that will make it easier to work with this idea. This is my last slide. So what happens when you get a cat bite? Whatever's going on with the teeth of the cat bypass the lymphatic area of the body, which is like the turnstile at the courthouse. It makes you empty out all your keys in your pocket and make sure you're not carrying any, you know, guns or whatever. And says, all right, this guy's free to go. You got the guards. They have their like little sheet of paper to make sure that like, you're not one of the bad guys that they're looking for or whatever. But when a cat bites, when you move past like the lymphatic system, it's like somebody doing like a Mission Impossible, like right down the rotunda of the courthouse and like totally bypassing the bypassing the turnstile, you know, like turning all of the, there's the guard who's just like watching the TVs and he's always like reading the sports section or something like that. And they do like the little hack where there's like nothing on the TV. That's what a cat bite's like. That's what a puncture is like. So I'll extend the metaphor of puncturing from physical accident, a nail, to a little bit more superficial, such as a tick or an insect, a spider, to much more superficial, as in energetic puncture. So these are the remedies that I would work for with any of that stuff. And they are lymphatic alternatives. They are flow movers. They are energetic boundary improvers. They are the remedy for puncture. Our immune system doesn't know how to respond to that. So it needs a little bit of a reminder sometimes. And that's why these herbs are so awesome. Do you know what the echidna is? The echidna is a really sacred animal. It's the sea urchin. And to the wealthy elite back in time, in ancient times, they used the echidna. They used the sea urchin, which is, you can imagine, is like a ball with a bunch of pokes, like a bunch of needles sticking out of it. They would use that for ink. They would use that for poison. They would use that for sorcery, pharmacy, like the word pharmacopoeia is a Greek word for like sorcery, like death, black magic kind of stuff. That's what they were doing. That's what some of these cults, the cults of the echinoderm, were up to. And I think it's really interesting because we have this word eche, which is from the root word from that echinoderm. And this is that is an etymological reference, but the rest of this stuff is green speak. So I see the word sea as in this, the S-E-A, the sea urchin, and the echina of the sea, the echinoderm, the sea urchin. And that's also really represented in the Doctrine of Signatures. That's why it's called echinacea, because it's because the those in the know that were coming here and looking at plants and naming them for all people to, you know, there's a priestcraft involved with making words. Words have meaning. So when these people in the know in this scholarly priestcraft were crafting words, they were crafting them with these deeper layers of spell. And anyway, the remedy for that, all of that stuff, the puncturing of our psyche, the puncturing of the person, the cat bite, is found in the echinacea. And look at the signature of the, this is a altered photo, obviously, but the, if you look at the plant, if you look at some pictures of it, you'll see the colors of stagnant blood. That's what it looks like. Stagnation, blood that's not healing. What's the word I'm looking for? It's not gangrenous. It's the word. It's the one before gangrene. Necrotic tissue. So echinacea is perfect for that necrotic necrosis, and any form of black magic necromancy. Poke? Well, you just got stabbed. You might as well poke it. At the same time, poke Salad Annie. Poke is a really low dose botanical. So in moderate doses, it's toxic, like very, very toxic. And in slightly higher than moderate doses, it can be fatal. So we got to watch out with poke. I always, when I use poke, I love poke because it's so effective. So I could take some poke tincture and rub it on my hands, and I could just put it on my glands, and it makes them so hot, and it just like melts the, pardon me for 1 second. I'm getting a call from my wife. I'm just going to pause for a second. Okay. Poke once again. Really aggressive. It pokes and pokes and pokes your lymphatic system. I like to think of poke for times that your lymphatic system has put stuff away and stagnated it so that it doesn't have to deal with it. I always think about poke for the box that I have in my basement that I've carried around from apartment to apartment since I was 19 years old. And it's just got a bunch of junk and notes and crap from like high school, but I feel like it's important to me and I just don't really want to go through it because it's like nonsense and stupid. So it's just a box in my basement. And one of these days, something is going to poke me and really get me to like clean this box out. So sometimes we just kind of sequester little things and we just kind of carry that with us as we go. And eventually when our situation is right and there's enough capacity and time and resources, then we can, you know, dump that box out and like take care of the contents. You know, if you have a bunch of stuff to deal with in your lymphatic system, it's not easy to always just like let go of it too. So I really think poke is one of those remedies that, you know, we can use sparingly, and it's super duper effective. So a couple drops topically on my neck when I'm feeling like my glands are swollen, and holy moly, does it just like open up the, like you could feel the stuff draining. It really helps. Like if your glands are getting backed up in your neck and your throat, it's going to back up into your ears. It's going to back up into your sinus. And eventually when it starts to move, it's going to like burn this like toxic nastiness down your throat and into your lungs. A lot of people experience that kind of pattern when they're getting sick. So working with poke is really nice, but it's super duper aggressive. So I like to always cool poke off with some cooling lymphatic alternatives like calendula, which is like neutral, and cleavers, which is cooling for sure. Red root, which is cooling. I should also say too that like when it comes to in tick bites, like my position on Lyme disease is that or what's I would say so-called Lyme disease or tick-borne illness is that what people are experiencing is a combination of this energetic puncturing and the inability to metabolize the venom, which is present in a tick from the body. And then also whatever other concoction of chemicals and antibiotics and blah, blah, blah that people are taking to really reduce that energetic container. So it's a breach in the energetic container for one, and two, sometimes like putting a bunch of toxic soup inside of the container. So my strategy when it comes to like a tick bite is working as the same way as a cat bite, as the same way as some sort of black magic spell. It's just the degrees of medicine administered. And echinacea is an awesome one for this. And I'm gonna go back here to echinacea because I love echinacea for the joints. Like it's a really great joint remedy. So a lot of times people feel like inflammation in their joints after a tick bite or something like that. And the way that it occurs to me, like if I meditate and put my consciousness into the situation, like I could see the stagnation of like a toxin, a venom occurring in places like the joints. Because if you look at a chicken bone, the tendons itself doesn't have like blood vessels. So it just like gets all the way there and it stops. And so on some people's position, it's caused by Borrelia spirochete that is hiding and shape shifting, and it goes all the way down and is so good at hiding that like you can never find it in some people, and it's so good at shape shifting that and whatnot that you find it in people that don't have Lyme and all this stuff, and you can see how much nonsense it really is without isolating the cause and putting that cause like X. That causes Y, and here's X isolated. It's just a composition fallacy, anyway. But it's definitely true that ticks have toxic venom, just like spiders do, just like snakes do, just like so on. Scorpions, arachnids in general. Just like echidnas. Red root is a really nice remedy for the lymphatic system because it's super astringent. And so it's kind of like wringing out the lymph. It's like really, really, really astringent. So I like to mix red root with demulcent ones like cleavers, which is to me, cleavers is just like moving the waters, restructuring the waters. You'll notice that a lot of these plants here are parts of like Lyme protocol. Why? Is it because cleavers is goes and kills Borrelia? No, it's because it structures the lymphatic system so that it moves out, so that it helps can alter and change the way that our body can process toxic stuff. There's a lot of let's see here. Dandelion flower, that's also cooling and structuring and really helpful, especially for like the breast tissues as well. Same with violet leaf. These are two that you can make into nourishing infusions. There are two that I find really helpful in an oil as well. So this is a good all-purpose lymphatic oil for the wintertime and just keeping your lymph moving and keeping your energetic boundary nice and strong, having a sesame infused dandelion flower, violet leaf oil, something like that. Really, really wonderful. Baptisia is like, it works a lot like echinacea for necrotic tissue, and but it's more for like the gangrenous type. So when tissue is getting really, really, really dark and it's really starting to rot, and it's difficult to reverse. Baptisia is for that. The signature for that is, if you look at the Baptisia plant, it's also called wild indigo. It looks like the plant looks like that. Once it start, the seed pods form, it's like a beautiful white flower with like a really dark purplish stem. And then once the seed pods form, they look like they're bruised with like decay. Alder bark. This is a fun one. There's some species of alder. It's a tree that grows in and by the water, but it's capable of growing in water because it has like these nitrogen fixing little rootlet thingies and little catkins as well. And alder, there's some species that like you can scratch the bark and it looks like it's kind of bleeding, like as if you got scratched by a cat, like as if you got scratched by a anything really that's like, you know, bypassing that lymphatic system and getting into the bloodstream. And I think red clover is a really good all around nourishing, not so much like some of these other ones I would call on for, like, you know, in the moment, like if I got bit by a tick, when I've got bit by a tick, I should say, I start working with echinacea right away. I put echinacea right on the site. I start taking a milliliter, which is 30 drops of echinacea tincture every hour or so for like 3 or 4 days. It's a lot of echinacea. If I'm concerned about something more long-term, I'm going to work with red clover more long-term, because I think red clover is it's a nice nourishing lymphatic alternative that doesn't have that like urgency that a lot of these other ones do. Same with cleavers, same with calendula, same with dandelion flower and violet leaf. Those are all like kind of like nicer long-term ones. And it's nice to know that you could put those into a formula with something like poke or baptisia to really cool off the aggression of those types of plants. So normally when I make something that's for this type of, let's just say, immune activation or whatever, a formula might consist of a tincture is like 4 parts echinacea, 4 parts calendula, 4 parts cleavers, and 3 drops of poke, something like that. Maybe even something like a tea that's like, you know, 2 tablespoons of calendula, 2 tablespoons of cleavers, 2 tablespoons of red clover, and like a teaspoon of echinacea, something like that. Or echinacea tincture to supplement as needed. So that works really well. That works really well. But the thing about this lymphatic, moving, stimulating business is that it's got to go somewhere. It's got to go into the bloodstream and it's got to get out. So it's really incumbent on the rest of the channels of the elimination to also be moving and open. It's not always easy, especially if somebody's in chronic pain for a long time. So a lot of these strategies, you know, it's not just like herb for this, you know, we have to look at the whole thing. We have to look at the whole situation. We have to look at how can this person take some of these remedies and also move this through their body? Do they have the chance to move their lymphatic system? Can they access a dry brush? That's really, really nice. Do they have a partner that can help massage them? Do you have a partner that can bring you tea, you know, while you rest into your healing phase? Do you have a chance to take time off of work? There's so many things to consider here. And that's why it's not just herbs for that. What herbs do you have for Lyme? What herbs do you have for the cold? What herbs do you have for the flu? Things are always shifting. They're always changing. They're always dependent upon people's unique situations. The last time I got bit by a tick, it was a deer tick, the one that's allegedly the bad one. Ooh, they're the bad ones. Bad nature. And it was right on the top of my head. Like if I were to take my finger, somebody says like, what's the top of your head? And point to it. Like if I could find center in on the very, very center point of my head, where my energetic donut opens up, that's where the tick was. Okay. I got that was hanging out on there for like a day too. So it was like all swollen and really engorged. And I know exactly what happened. I was digging Solomon's seal, and at this patch of Solomon's seal that I used to harvest and tend, and I needed Solomon's seal because I was, and I was like rationalizing, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a big year. I just need the Solomon's seal. And I come back here every year and I tend it. So I deserve it and blah, blah, blah. And I can hear the sound. I in my way of communicating with plants and how they communicate audibly in my heart, I can hear the plant say, that's enough. And I said, you don't understand. I need more because I'm making more and it's going to be a big year, blah, blah, blah. And I even heard like, that's enough. And I was like, just one more. I promise. That's it. All right. We're done. Got the last one. See, look, I put some seeds back in there for you. And there was a strong negotiation between the plant and I lost, because that's exactly what happened. Like, that's what happened. I got a tick right there. So I don't know. Is it a coincidence? No. I mean, maybe to some people it would be like, oh, wow, crazy that you were like having a conversation with a plant and then the tick bites you, right? But as somebody who feels like very strongly about plant communication and my role in the natural world and how to tap into that and tune into that, I knew exactly what was going on. Like, it was like a retribution almost. And Solomon seals is a Saturnian plant too. So it was like a punishment. And I had to deal with it. And as Saturn would have it, I ended up developing a really great understanding of these concepts in general based on my experience. And it took me almost till the end of the next season. Like, that was the end of the growing season when I was doing that. And the whole next year, as a forager, as somebody who goes out into the stuff to get medicine, I felt really traumatized. Like, I felt like I couldn't go off the trail. Otherwise, I was going to get bit by a tick. Like, there was a lot to overcome energetically. I knew there was a huge lesson beyond a tick bite, beyond, you know, I got the tick tested and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And luckily for me, I'm very proactive. I know how to work with these things. I didn't take antibiotics. I haven't taken antibiotics for a long time. I feel like my energetic container is in like really nice shape to adjust to these types of lessons. So, but it was, and I got sick right away, and it was a thing that I had to overcome. And I really felt like for a long time that my energetic container, which exits out right here and comes all the way, wraps around you, was punctured. And there was like a scar and there was a trauma from that. And I had to really gain the trust of the wild again in order to step into it. So I'm telling you that I'm going to consider all of these things when it comes to herbalism and it comes to health. And it doesn't always come across that way when I'm saying, I think echinacea would be good for you right now. I think that dandelion flowers are really going to be helpful. And I like to explain to people sometimes like where I feel like my point will land and where it will meet. But I think it's really fun and really fun to let all of these possibilities go through your head and see what kind of places your intuition can lead you and guide you and continue to do these types of work and get feedback from people. That's the most important thing, so that you know that you're not just like throwing out ideas and seeing whatever sticks to the wall. It's just, there is a science to it. So anyway, that is the end of the immune, vitalist immune presentation. I'm going to come back with some questions that I'll pose about the dominant paradigm right now, which is the germ theory. And so that'll be it. And then I'll wrap it up. Of course, I really appreciate your questions so that we could address them in the Q&A. Really appreciate your time as well. Gosh, there was something else I just felt like saying. I can't remember. I'm gonna, if you just give me a second here, bear with me. I'm just gonna try and think of it. It's gone. It's all right. Wasn't supposed to say it. Yeah, thanks so much, y'all. And we'll be back for some more. And please have your questions ready for me. Write them down and let me know what you think. And as always, it's a real pleasure. So thank you.